This is Digital Story Podcast number 681, April 2nd, 2019. Today's theme is the Ricoh GR3 review in comparison to the Fujifilm XF10. I'm Derek Story. It is stealth black and can hide behind an iPhone without detection. It is so nondescript that you can point it directly at a subject on the street, and they will barely notice that a camera is pointing at them. Yet once an exposure is made, the takeaway is a high-quality 24-megapixel image that's capable of making posters. What is this ninja camera? It is the Ricoh GR3, and it's the subject of today's TDS Photography Podcast. What a great feeling it was to embark upon an afternoon of street photography in San Francisco with nothing more than the Ricoh GR3, the $899 pocket camera, in my left front pocket, and my iPhone 10 in my right front pocket. And that was it. That was an afternoon of photography with just those two items. I mean, it was great. Nothing around my shoulder, nothing to look out for, none of that kind of stuff at all. Just traveling very free and easy. And, you know, the bottom line on, you know, that first day of shooting with the camera was the images surprised me in the fact that it was so responsive, the camera. It did a very good job of, you know, capturing what I saw on a moment's notice. And the image quality was fantastic. So, I mean, if any of those are lingering questions for you with the Ricoh GR3, let me right now assure you that this is a quality device that does a very good job at what it's intended to do, which is to provide high-resolution imagery in a very small package. So now I'm going to get into the details of this camera, and then I'm also going to compare it to, I think, its main competitor, which is the Fujifilm XF10, which I've also talked about on this podcast, and that part will be really fun. But first, let's get to know the GR3, and then we'll move along from there. So it has a 24.2 megapixel APS-C sensor. So this is the big deal. It has an APS-C sensor in a really compact package. As I said, I can hide it behind my iPhone 10 and you can't see the camera at all. It has the GR Engine 6, and I can tell you right now that the processing, the image processing, and the behavior of the camera is very snappy, so they've done a good job with that part of it. It includes a 28mm f2.8 lens, and that's in 35mm equivalent. It has a 3-axis shake reduction system, and it is just outstanding. Just outstanding. It has a 3-inch million dot touch screen LCD on the back. Now, the LCD doesn't tilt. It is a fixed back LCD, but it is a touch screen. It does have full HD 1080 at 60p video recording. It has Bluetooth LE and Wi-Fi built in. It has a hybrid AF system, and it has macro mode. And then it has crop modes so that you can shoot at a simulated 35mm and 50mm focal length. I'm going to talk about most of this at greater length in just a minute. And then it uses a USB Type-C port, and then it has one SD card slot, standard SD card slot. So, you know, there are the feature highlights of the camera. Now, the things that I liked about this camera, they jumped out at me pretty fast. I mean, after an hour of shooting with it, I already go, wow, I like this, you know. And, you know, the affection for it really grew over the course of the first day and has continued to grow since. But those initial things, which are the things that you're probably interested in, let's cover those right now. So it's very responsive. So it has fast performance. So it starts up quickly. You point it at something, it focuses quickly. It has a snapshot mode if you want to focus really quickly. In other words, you do the predetermined focus and then it just, boom, it just fires. But even without that snapshot mode, it focuses quickly. I had one incident, not an incident, it was really an opportunity, where I was sitting in Union Square and I was just watching the world go by. And this guy pushing a grocery cart was just like, came whizzing by me, just like really fast. He was just kind of, you know, just doing this grocery cart racing in Union Square. I had the camera in my hand, but it wasn't on. So I pressed the on button as I felt him coming, lifted up the camera right as he was passing in front of me, and snapped a series of four shots. And I was really impressed that the camera caught the shots. They were quite good. One of the modes that you can set, and I love it that Pentax does this, Pentax Ricoh does this, where you can set a bias for the program mode. So you can set more of a depth of field bias or a more shallow depth of field with the GR3, which means also a faster shutter speed. So I'm always going for the more shallow depth of field with the faster shutter speed. It's just the way I shoot. And I had the GR3 set to that, and it nailed those shots. And those shots came out of nowhere, and one of them is probably one of my favorites of the day. So it's a very responsive camera. Second thing that I really liked, it has impressive image stabilization. Now, it says it has 3-axis shake reduction. Well, it's probably the best 3-axis shake reduction I've ever seen. It is tremendous. And I kept pushing it and pushing it, you know, the handheld shooting, you know, a longer exposure, especially as we got into evening and darkness. And at one point, I was shooting shots over at the tunnel on Stockton Street. It's a long tunnel. It's kind of neat shooting at night with it. And I had the ISO at 200, I believe, and which was, you know, way lower than it should have been for an f2.8 lens. And I was steadying myself against the wall of the tunnel and doing these handheld shots because I wanted a long shutter so that I could get trails on the cars passing by while I was hand-holding this. And the shake reduction has the railings and the wall and the concrete, all that stuff was very sharp, and I got the car trails. And some of these exposures were like a half a second. I mean, just incredibly long exposures for handheld photography. And the image stabilization really did a great job of making those more than usable shots. I think they're quite good. So it has very impressive image stabilization. That might be my favorite feature of the camera. Outstanding black and white options. Now, the GR series has always been known for great black and white, and the GR3 is no exception. It has 4 black and white modes. It has monotone, soft monotone, hard monotone, and high contrast black and white. My favorite of the 4 is hard monotone, and it is a real edgy Tri-X kind of look, and it's outstanding. Now, all 4 modes have their use. High contrast black and white goes a little further on the contrast than I normally like. And the soft monotone, I think, is quite good for portraits. And the monotone's great for just general black and white work. But the hard monotone for urban work is fantastic. It's just spectacular. And I did the thing where I shot RAW plus JPEG with the camera. Now, its RAW mode is DNG, so you don't have to wait for a RAW profile or anything right away. All my apps could interpret the RAW files because they were DNGs. And so the DNGs would be in color, you know, as a RAW file would be. And then the high-quality JPEGs were the hard monotones. And, I mean, I really felt like I was doing cake and eat it, too. I really did. I got these fantastic black and whites. I got the RAWs, and it was just also very excellent. So anyway, those black and white options on the GR3, those are part of things that made it a cult classic to begin with, and they are there again on this version of the camera. Number 4, easy to use and very powerful macro mode. I like the macro mode on this camera. It has a button on the jog dial. very familiar location for macro mode. You push it there, it right away goes into macro mode. You can hear it do it, and then you can get quite close. You can get quite close with it. Very, very good macro mode, very handy to have on a camera that size, because you're probably carrying around and you can use it for documentation as well as art photography. And that macro mode really, you know, helps it to serve that second purpose. And then it has a very handy crop mode for 35 millimeter and 50 millimeter perspectives. And that's what it calls it, by the way. It calls it crop mode. So at first, while you're looking through the menu, you're looking for it, you're probably looking for like 35 or 50 millimeter emulation or something like that. You're not going to get that. What you look for is crop mode. And then that's what it is right there. There is a function button on the back of the camera. And, you know, there's always this debate in my mind, what am I going to use the function button for? And it changes with my mood or sometimes with what I'm doing. But I pretty much settled on using the function button for the crop mode, just because you just press it and you just cycle right through. You know, so you're at 28 millimeters, you press it, you're at 35, you press it again, you're at 50, you press it again, you're back at 28. Really easy to do and to go into the different perspectives. At full resolution, this camera captures at 6,000 by 4,000 pixels. Again, it's an APS-C sensor, so 3x2 dimension, and you get 6,000 by 4,000 pixels, which are really nice files, especially the DNGs. They're terrific. If you use the crop mode, you do pay a price in terms of resolution on the files. However, it's not horrible. So for instance, at the 50 millimeter crop mode, which is the most severe one, the files are 3,360 by 2,240. I do use crop mode because sometimes I'm so visual about how I go about my photography that even though I know I can crop it later in post, I just like seeing it cropped when I shoot it the way that I want it. And you know, that's the way I am with these things. I really want to frame the image the way that I like it in the camera and then go from there. So for me, crop mode's really nice. However, if you don't want to use it and just always shoot at 6,000 by 4,000, you can do that. And then of course, crop later on in post. Either way, the camera is very accommodating. So those are the five things that I really liked about this little powerhouse. And of course, it needs to have some really nice attributes because it's $899, which is a lot for a pocket camera, okay? Even though it does have that APS-C sensor, $899 is a chunk of change. I mean, a lot of people would get a very good DSLR for that. And obviously you could get some very good mirrorless cameras for that amount of money. So then, of course, I was wondering, how does it compare to the Fujifilm XF10, which I own? So I have the GR3 on loan right now from B&H. And then I have the Fujifilm XF10, which started out on loan from B&H, and then I bought it because I loved it so much. And the Fujifilm is $499 compared to $899 for the GR3. And in fact, if you get the black version of the Fujifilm XF10, it's only $449 right now on B&H. And by the way, as you can imagine, I have links to all this stuff in the show notes. So just go to show notes and you see the links to everything. How does it stack up? Well, I have seven categories here where I compare them head to head. And, you know, these are the categories that were important to me. And I think they should be, most of them anyway, should be important to you as well. So I think you'll find this interesting. The image stabilization winner, that's the first category. And of course, that's hands down, Ricoh is the winner. The image stabilization is quite good on the GR3. And the XF10 doesn't have stabilization at all. And in my street photography, especially in evening and night, the GR3 was a better camera to have because during the day, not having image stabilization for a 28 millimeter lens is not that big a deal. And the XF10 has good high ISO performance. So even as the light starts to dip or if you're indoors, you can still get by without it. But then if you really want to push it, like I did on my San Francisco shoot, then there's a big difference between the GR3 and the XF10. And the GR3 has that great image stabilization and really does make a difference in certain low light conditions. So the big winner there, of course, is Ricoh. The flash photography winner is Fujifilm. Again, it's hands down as well in this particular category because, yeah, the GR3 does have a hot shoe, which the Fujifilm doesn't. But in my case, my answer is, but who wants to carry a flash around that's bigger than the camera? I mean, for me, the whole idea of this camera is to have something really small that I can put in my pocket and travel the way that I did that afternoon in San Francisco, where I had the GR3 in one pocket and the iPhone in the other pocket, and that was it. That was all I was carrying. I don't want to carry a flash in that situation. By comparison, the flash in the XF10 is really good. It's super intelligent. It's built right in. It does a great job of balancing the output from the flash with the ambient light. It has a nice color to it. It's just a really good flash to have on the camera, and it's very handy, especially for fill flash. So in this case, Fujifilm really wins this particular category. It has a flash. GR3 does not, but the GR3 does have a hot shoe. The film simulation winner, well, that's a draw, actually. Both cameras have great film simulation. They really do. I mean, both cameras take gorgeous pictures. They honestly do. The way that it shakes out, though, is that the GR3 is a tad better at black and white, even though Fuji, up until I shot with the GR3, I thought the black and white modes on the Fuji film were fantastic. But I don't know, there's just a little certain secret sauce in the GR3 that I like a bit better. So the black and white from the GR3s definitely has an edge. However, the color from the XF10 is amazing. And I would say that one of the strongest suits of the Fujifilm camera is its amazing color. And not only does it have great color film simulation modes, it just has great color, period. So, you know, both of these cameras have these strengths, and I think it really, in this particular area, comes down to, you know, what's most important to you. The autofocus winner, and this may surprise you, the autofocus winner for me in my testing, where I'm just sitting there with both cameras, right, and focus here, focus here, focus here, focus, you know, one hand, the other hand, is a draw. And the reason why you might be surprised, same reason I was surprised, is that the XF10 has been criticized for its slowish, sluggish autofocus. But using the single point autofocusing, which is how I autofocus, you know, with a single point that either I put in the center or I move to one side or the other, depending on what my subject is, using that with both the Fujifilm and the Ricoh, they performed about the same. They really did. I would hold up one camera and focus on a subject, and then I'd hold up the other camera and focus on the same subject. You know, just right. They're so small, right? You have one in one hand, one in the other, and they felt about the same to me. And you know, to tell you the truth, I don't have a problem with either of them. The criticism of the XF10 on the autofocusing, I never really bought into, and I'm not trying to shoot sports with this thing. It's not designed for that. So I always thought the autofocusing was good for what I was doing. And I would say the same thing about the GR3. The autofocusing on it is quite good, and it gets the job done. And it's not perfect. It's not as good as a top-of-the-line Nikon. Okay, we know that, right? But for what we use these cameras for, I think autofocusing is good. I'd say you're fine with either one. The macro mode winner, that goes to Ricoh. And I think they've done a great job with the close-up mode, the macro mode. It's easy to get to. It does a good job once you're there. Close-up mode on the XF10, I find just maddening because Fuji has taken away the dedicated macro button that it used to have on its cameras. And so now you have to go to, you know, a different mode, a mode that's, you know, using its intelligence to pick the right mode, all this kind of stuff. And it's just not as clean as the way the GR3 approaches it. So I've really got to give the nod to Rico on the macro mode. I just think it does a better job with it. Now, on the looks and operation winner, again, it's a draw for me. And I'll tell you why. Because both cameras have their own unique strengths in this area. For instance, on the GR3, I love the auto lens cap. So I don't have to fool with a lens cap at all. I press the power button, the cap opens, and the lens is there, and you take a picture, and you turn off the power, and it retracts, and it's done. And by the way, the GR2 had some issues with dust getting in there when it was opening and retracting, and actually worked its way to the sensor. Supposedly, that has been fixed with the GR3. So I love the auto cap on the GR3, and I really don't like the removable lens cap on the XF10. I always feel like I have to keep an eye on it, and in putting it on, the way that it goes on, I always have to feel like I do it carefully, and it's just more work than I want. So in that area, I really like the Ricoh's approach. However, the XF10 looks really good. I mean, it has great looks, and it includes a leather strap. And that leather strap, along with those good looks, really make for a nice package. And especially the champagne and leather version of the camera is just, I just think it's a real eye popper. Compared to the super stealth look, the all black mode of the Ricoh GR3, and then the little string strap that you get, the standard string strap that you could buy online for $2.99, that's what you get with it. So in that area, I really think the XF10 is a much nicer camera. However, if you do want the super stealth look, I tell you, the GR3 is about as stealthy as they get. It is like a little black box that people don't even seem to notice. So again, personal taste. One other thing, the XF10 has a command ring around the lens that I actually use to switch to the different crop modes, which then frees up my Bluetooth button for other things. There's enough on either side to where I think the whole thing sort of balances out. Now, the last category here is the connectivity and geotagging winner, and that is Fujifilm. And I think, again, this is another strength of the XF10, that it connects really easily to my iPhone. The Bluetooth works great, the Wi-Fi works great, and because it works so well, I can easily geotag my Fujifilm images in real time. In other words, I just take the picture and they're automatically geotagged because the phone is talking to my camera. And after many, many, many tries, I still cannot get the GR3 to connect to my smartphone via Bluetooth. I can via Wi-Fi, it's working, but I can't via Bluetooth. And I have done all the things that you're supposed to do to make it work, and I just can't make it work. Therefore, I can't automatically geotag my images. And then I saw that the GR3's implementation of that isn't as strong as Fujifilm's anyway. So connectivity and geotagging is definitely easier on the Fujifilm. In that category, they get the checkbox. All of that being said, then, is a Ricoh GR3 worth the hefty price tag? And the way that I'm looking at this, it really comes down to three things. Do you need the image stabilization? Do you want the hot shoe? And do you like the stealthy design better? If the image stabilization and hot shoe in particular are important, because you can get a black version of the Fujifilm too, but if those two things are super important to you, then it's probably worth the heftier price tag to get the GR3. The GR3 is worth $899. I mean, the images and the way it performs and all of that stuff, it is worth $899. So you're not being taken advantage there. However, if you don't need those things, especially the image stabilization and the hot shoe, and then, you know, you kind of keeping in your mind a checklist of where Fujifilm did better and where the GR3 did better, my comparison, you can save yourself a lot of money, still get the same size sensor, still get fantastic image quality, still get most of the features with the XF10. That is a difficult decision. I already own the XF10, so I'm not going to spend an additional $900 to get the GR3. If I didn't have either one of them, and I had the chance to test them both the way that I have, I'm not sure where I would end up. I think the cheapness of me would still end up with the XF10, but that image stabilization in the GR3 would really be a draw. Tough call there. This is the part where I turn it over to you and you take it from there. Hope you enjoyed my comparison of these two wonderful cameras. Ricoh says it will repair GR3 cameras affected by a wobbly control dial scroll wheel. And this is an article that just broke on DP Review as I was doing the podcast notes. So I thought, wow, how timely is this? I will include it in the show. Let me read you what they had to say. Ricoh Korea and Japan have issued a statement regarding an issue with select Ricoh GR3 cameras that caused the control dial of the camera to jiggle more than it should, as seen in the above video, and they have a video shared by Photo Rumors. Following an investigation of the issue, Ricoh says it will fix affected devices free of charge and notes that the movement of the controls does not interfere with the functionality of the camera. The translated statement says the basic specification is to set a slight rotation allowance width, but as a result of investigation, it has been found that some products with the following target serial numbers have combinations with large display inclinations. That definitely sounds like a translation, doesn't it? In other words, they found that some of the cameras did have that little bit of wobble. Now, the list of serial numbers is listed in the DP Review article, which I've linked to in the show notes. My camera, the one that I've been testing, does not have this problem at all. And in fact, the design of the camera and the build of the camera is fantastic. I don't have that issue on what I'm shooting with. And then I did check the serial numbers, and my camera did not fall within that serial number range. So, you know, I lucked out there. If you do have a GR3, either on the way or already, then check those serial numbers, and Ricoh will take care of it for free for you. I believe starting April 8th, you can send your camera back in. They will either fix it or send you a new one. The best photography April Fool's Day jokes of 2019. This was fun. So I'm recording this on April Fool's. You're listening to it the day after. And I thought it was a pretty good April Fool's online. There was some really good stuff. So I have a link to an article in Petapixel that kind of rolls up some of their favorites. So it's nice. You can see a bunch of them just in one article. My favorites from that list included Nikon's left-handed DSLR, Elon Musk's camera ambitions, and they picked that poor Kickstarter Yashica for that one. That was pretty hilarious. Pentax unveils an MED camera, and the mock-up on that one is terrific. The SD card photo printer, again, pretty good image with that one. And then my personal favorite, which Petapixel didn't talk about, but that I linked to on our Facebook page and on Twitter, was from DP Review, which was the Minolta Dimage 5 hands-on review. And this was great. They did it just like a regular camera review, complete with image quality pictures and features. I mean, it was really nicely done. But of this camera that is a 3-megapixel camera from a million years ago. And I just thought it was hilarious, and hats off to DP Review for that one. So if you want to see a roll-up for the ones that Petapixel liked, I have a link in the show notes. And then the one that I liked from DP Review, that's on Facebook and Twitter. Alrighty. A big thanks to our Inner Circle members, and you guys and gals have been super helpful lately, and I've just loved the projects we've been working on, which I will talk about next week. I'm not going to talk about it this week. It's a little too early yet, but if you're on the Inner Circle, just know that I appreciate your feedback. And if you want to become an Inner Circle member, which I highly recommend because there's all sorts of kind of cool benefits to it. Yes, you're supporting this podcast, which is a big deal. At least it is to me, right? And but you're also finding out about stuff ahead of time. You're also involved on conversations that are just, you know, in the inner circle and not for the general public, where, you know, it's a trusted group where I can kick ideas around. And, you know, I know these people care, and I really listen to their feedback. There's that. And then, of course, there's VIP. If you come to a workshop, you have VIP status. There's the additional content I put on there. There's all sorts of good stuff. If you want to become a part of that, there's a tile on every page of the Digital Story. Just look for the Patreon tile. Click on that, and that takes you over to our Inner Circle page. You can see what's going on there, and hopefully at some point you will support the show. And I'll just thank you ahead of time for that, and a big thanks to all our current Inner Circle members. You guys and gals have been great. And finally, a huge thanks to our friends at Red River Paper, who support this podcast. I don't know how they find time when they're not supporting the show to actually make printing paper and publish things on their blog and keep their Facebook page going and continue with the reviews and everything that they do. But they do all of that in addition to supporting our podcast, which I very much appreciate. They have high quality printing paper at an affordable price. And the other thing about it is they have a wide variety of stuff. So when you're looking to find the right paper for the project that you have in mind, I think your odds are going to be better with Red River Paper than almost any other place. Just the variety of surfaces and stocks and thicknesses and cuts and all that kind of stuff. It's just, you can get exactly what you need. And it just feels great to be able to say, yes, that is the perfect stock for this project. And then right away, you have this confidence about this project. It's really going to come off because you've got the right paper, you've got the right idea, and it just all comes together. They have a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story, and I encourage you to click on it and investigate a little bit about what's going on over there. And then they also have a wonderful Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. All right, that's going to do it for me this week. I had a lot of fun shooting with the GR3, and I don't have to send it back for another 2.5 weeks. So I got another 2.5 weeks with it. I'm just going to live it up. I hope you enjoyed the review. I hope you enjoyed the comparison to the XF10. You can't miss with either one of them. It just comes down to features and price. I'm working on some great stuff for next week. I hope you come back and join me. Until then, have a wonderful week. Bye-bye now.